Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Tired. It's also rainy today, so like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Good day to record.
Really loud thunder this morning.
Good day to record because then I don't have to be outside. Also, my brother woke me up this morning, so we're feuding. He like dropped something in his bedroom and it was so loud. And then I tried to go back to bed and then he just like started like running down the stairs, dragging like laundry baskets behind him. And they were like clacking on the stairs. It was really annoying. I don't know. I also like really wanted to be Monday because here's the thing. Queen's Podcast puts out episodes like sporadically, but Monday, usually I get Katie's Corner. And I need more podcasts. And also on Mondays and Wednesdays is when Recovering Gleek comes out. And then from like Thursday to like Sunday, I don't have any episodes to listen to because I've already finished everything else. And also they just did Blame It on the Alcohol. And I'm really excited to hear the listener feedback on the specific Kurt and Blaine storyline of that episode. I hate that episode for that plot only. I love that episode so much, but I skip over that plot because it makes me sad. Okay, welcome to Not So Bloody Mary Podcast, a podcast where we talk about bad women in history with bad reputations, and then we try to decide if they deserve that reputation or not. So we've gotten a lot of new followers on TikTok recently, so if you're from TikTok, hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
We love
you're probably here from my really good you definitely are, guys. Literally though, like, why do so many people like that? I don't know. It's just,
you know,
it's very nice to have you here. We have like 36 TikTok followers now, which is a lot because we had like 12 last week. So
yay.
Yeah, shout out to that one person who commented on our TikTok that Mary Tudor wasn't the first crowned queen. And then I said, actually, she was the first queen that had a coronation. And then the person was like, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, positive interactions on the internet. Yay! today is part 5 of Mary Tudor. She gets 6 parts because here's the thing, y'all. I can't condense things, which is going to prove to be a problem in my American history class. But also, I think the difference between Anne Boleyn and Mary Tudor is that Mary Tudor was in the public eye for literally her entire life from the moment she was born. So we talked about all of her life. So obviously, it's going to be longer. And also, she lived longer. Cries. Happy May, everybody.
Woohoo.
My least favorite month, RIP. Yeah, so we left Mary Tudor. Basically, Edward had just died, if you remember. Little baby Eddie. King Ed, I guess. I don't know. And Jane Grey had just been proclaimed queen because Edward changed the succession because he didn't want Mary to, change England back to Catholicism, but also he also disinherited Elizabeth because he disinherited Mary because she was a bastard, and therefore, you know, he also thought that Elizabeth couldn't reign because she was a bastard. So,
right.
Fun. Christ. I'm really tired today, guys, so good
luck.
I don't
know if you can tell.
Good luck. I actually watched a movie yesterday. I never watch movies. I, like, hate watching movies because I get so bored.
Me too.
There's only certain movies that I can watch. But I watched The Battle of the Sexes last night, and my brother left like 10 minutes in. So I guess he's sexist. He's literally not. He was just uncomfortable. But he didn't come back, and I was actually kind of mad about that because he just went back and watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which he's seen all the episodes like 7 times. So, Cooper, I know you're not listening, but if you are, like, what the actual heck, buddy?
Like, come on.
Yeah, Billie Jean King is the icon that we all deserve, so why did you stop watching the movie about her? Anyways, so Lady Jane Grey was proclaimed queen, but no one was really very happy about it. like the people of England, they were really confused. So the Genoese merchant Baptista Spinola said that no one showed any sign of rejoicing and no one cried long live the queen except the herald who made the proclamation and the archers that followed him. For the hearts of the people are with Mary, the Spanish queen's daughter. I guess Mary's biggest fan, Gilbert Potter, shouted out that Lady Mary was the rightful queen, but unfortunately for him, he was arrested and sent to Cheapside, where his ears were nailed to the pillory and then cut off.
Oh.
Gilbert was just trying to be, like, I don't, poor Gilbert. But unfortunately for Mary, all hope of her, like, accession to the throne looked like it was gone, because the armory, the treasury, and the Great Seal were all under the control of the Duke of Northumberland. So the armory is, like, I'm going to assume the army. Yeah. The treasury is like the money. And then the Great Seal is like this really important thing that whenever the king or queen like makes proclamation, like whoever's the crowned monarch, they sign it with the Great Seal. And then it's like, you can make laws with it. So the Duke of Northumberland had all of those. And then Lady Jane Grey was in possession of the Tower, which was like a fort. And the capital therefore seemed to be secure. Warships had also been dispatched to the Thames River, and troops were stationed, like, everywhere to prevent the people from, you know, revolting. Mary didn't have any soldiers. She didn't have really, like, sufficient money. She was kind of isolated in East Anglia, and she only really had her household servants with her. The ambassadors that were sent by the emperor were kind of, like, pessimistic about her safety. They were like, Northumberland secured French support, so Mary's chances are, like, impossible. Glad to see they have hope, but like honestly they were probably, you know, why would they think that she could take over? But Mary was determined to proclaim herself queen, and this the ambassadors believed was kind of a stupid idea because it was really dangerous. She doesn't really care. They sent agents to advise her not to issue a proclamation but to wait to see if she was going to have any support. But you know, does she wait?
Not
really. On July 9th, Mary wrote to Jane's council from Kenning Hall, and she demanded that it, like, renounce Jane and recognize her as queen because her father's will decreed that. She called upon them to display their loyalty to her and declared that she was ready to pardon them, just, you know, in the hope of avoiding bloodshed and civil war. Really nice there. after presenting the dispatch to the Privy Council, Mary's messenger, Thomas Hungate, was sent to the Tower. Poor little man. He was just doing what he was told. The council replied in a letter on the same day that was addressed to My Lady Mary, and they criticized your supposed title, which you judge yourself to have. They asserted that Jane was Queen of England because, you know, the late king had made her that, and she was endorsed by nobility of the realm. They also reminded her that by an act of parliament, she was illegitimate and unable to inherit, and urged her to submit. The Duke of Suffolk, Jane's father, was nominated to lead an army of reinforcements to East Anglia to capture Mary, although Jane started crying and was like, can my dad stay home with me, please? And so the Duke of Northumberland was like, fine, I'll lead the charge myself. Let's remember that Jane is like a 15-year-old child, 16 at this point. No, I think she's still 15. Yeah, I think she's still 15, maybe, because her birthday's like right before Edward's. And he died at 15. RIP. Northumberland set out from Durham Palace with munitions, artillery, field guns, and more than 6,000 men. That's a lot. It's not like a ton, but like Mary doesn't really have anyone, so.
Yeah.
The imperial ambassadors wrote to Charles, we believe that my lady will be in his hands in 4 days' time unless she has sufficient force to resist. Yet as he did ride towards Mary, Northumberland noted that the people like came to see them, but they didn't cry out like Godspeed or like anything in their favor. They were just kind of like quiet little, like they're just staring because they didn't really like them. For 5 days, Mary stayed at Kenning Hall and she rallied her friends and her supporters. The core of her support was her household because, you know, they're fun. On July 12th, with her forces growing, Mary moved southeast to another of her principal houses, which was Framlingham Castle in Suffolk, the ancient seat of the Howard family. It was, like, way larger than Kenning Hall, and it was the strongest castle in the area, which meant that it was an ideal place to defend against or, like, engage a determined enemy.
Yay!
finally, At 8 in the evening, she arrived. Fun. Her standard was then, like, unfurled and displayed over the tower, which was, like, a defiant gesture because it looked like there was going to be conflict at any second. Norfolk, they told her that Norfolk had, like, 3,000 men. Thought she had 6,000, but whatever. Mary's forces and supplies were, like, really thin in comparison. She sent a desperate appeal to the imperial ambassadors because she said that she saw destruction hanging over her unless she received help. But the emperor was like, no, you're not going to come to the throne. You have, like, no chance. So he didn't send anything.
Oh.
Thanks, Charles. She literally, like, loves him. And he's like, yeah, no. For a number of days, Mary's fate hung in the balance. In many towns, it was, like, a really confused picture for all the people of changing allegiances. In Ipswich, Sir Thomas Cornwallis, the sheriff of Norfolk and Suffolk, together with Thomas Lord Wentworth and other prominent Suffolk men, initially declared for Jane on July 11th. But then one of Mary's servants, Thomas Poley, arrived in the town's marketplace and proclaimed Mary hereditary Queen of England. And then Cornwallis declared for Mary. So they just kind of, like, did it.
Yeah.
As one man described it, the public outcry against Jane was so massive. Like, everyone didn't want her. So Cornwallis actually was, like, afraid that he was going to die if he didn't declare for Mary. Yeah, people are aggressive, I guess. In Norwich, the town authorities on July 11th had refused to open the gates to Mary's messengers because they're like, we didn't know for certain that the king's dead. But they then, the next day, proclaimed her, and they also sent her men and arms. So gradually events began to, like, swing in Mary's favor. That's good, I guess. Yeah. A bunch of people flocked to her side. But one figure was, like, she couldn't get him. To secure her position in eastern Suffolk, she needed to win the support of Thomas Lord Wentworth because he was a prominent and respected nobleman. And she sent two of her servants, John Tyrell and Edward Glenham, to Nettlestead to negotiate with him. Tyrell is literally the last name of Marjorie Tyrell from Game of Thrones.
Oh.
It was Natalie Dormer. We do love Natalie Dormer. Honestly, icon. Also, she got Instagram and then, like, disappeared.
Yeah, like, what was with that?
I don't even know if it was actually her. Because
I hope so.
Wasn't
she verified?
I don't know, but her account doesn't exist anymore because our podcast was following it and then it wasn't there.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, I was really excited for Natalie Dormer to get Instagram. Natalie Dormer, we know you're listening. Get Instagram. Or Twitter. I can deal with either. It would be great. Mary was told this guy, Wentworth, that if he forsook her cause, it would lead to the perpetual dishonor of his house. And he was like, okay. So he declared for her. And it was, like, a massive deal. Wentworth arrived at Framlingham on the 15th, and he was wearing armor and he had a large military force of gentlemen and tenants. This came, like, just in time because Northumberland was en route to Bury St. Edmunds, which was 24 miles from Framlingham. 500 men were appointed to guard Mary within the walls of the castle. But, you know, she's Mary, so she's Catherine of Aragon's daughter. Pretty chill.
Yeah.
She summoned her household council, she ordered her field commanders to prepare her forces for battle, and she issued a proclamation asserting her authority and made clear her defiance. Because she's bougie like that.
Yes.
Venom.
Of course.
Venom. Yeah. Within days, an unskilled and disorganized mob had been turned into, like, an actual disciplined army, and they were really eager to meet the enemy. Men are so dumb sometimes. Like, literally, why were they always so excited to go to war? I mean, no, I know this. I literally spent, like, a full hour on it in history class this year. But I could give you 6 reasons that they wanted to go to war, but they're all dumb. So,
yeah.
On the 20th of July, Mary rode down from the castle to review her troops, and helmets were thrown high in the air, and they were like, long live our good Queen Mary and death to the traitors. Mary dismounted from her horse, and then for the next 3 hours she inspected her troops on foot. Would that not be, like, boring?
Yeah, would it not? I think, yeah.
I feel like she'd be, like, into it, though, so it's fine. Since Northumberland's departure from London, the Privy Councillors had actually begun to, like, waver in their support for Jane as queen, because they were like, we kind of feel bad, because Mary's, like, actually King Henry VIII's daughter. So, like, by the 18th, their resolve had crumbled. The following day, a dozen or so privy counselors broke out of the tower, which had been locked at rendezvoused at Pembroke's house, Baynard's castle. There they took the final step. In a speech before the council, Arundel declared that the crown belonged rightfully by direct succession to my Lady Mary, lawful and natural daughter of our King Henry VIII. I would just like to point out that there has not been a single King Henry since King Henry VIII. And I feel like all the British royalty kind of went, no. You know.
Yeah.
At 5 or 6 in the evening of the 20th of July, as Arundel and Paget set out to pledge their fidelity to Marriott Framlingham and petition for pardon on behalf of the whole council, 2 heralds and 3 trumpeters rode from Baynard's castle to the cross at Cheapside. The streets were full of Londoners, and the heralds announced that Mary was now queen. Apparently, there was so much shouting of the people, and they kept throwing up their caps and crying, God save Queen Mary, that the style of the proclamation actually couldn't be heard because the people were so happy, like, everyone.
Yeah.
That's, like, the sweetest thing, but also kind of sad. For 2 days, all the bells in London were ringing. Money was just kind of, like, you know, given out. And there were banquets and bonfires in the streets. One of the imperial ambassadors reported that it would be impossible to imagine greater rejoicing than this. They're all so happy. That's because she's Henry VIII's daughter, but also because she's Catherine of Aragon's daughter, and they, like, are obsessed with both of them.
Yeah.
Literally, like, the best combination. Upon hearing the news, Northumberland, then at Cambridge, was forced to admit defeat. He threw his cap in the air, and he was like, fine, she's queen. The attempt to coup was over, and that evening, the Earl of Arundel arrived to arrest Northumberland in the queen's name. Yeet. Days before she was to be crowned at Westminster Abbey, Mary called together her council for an impromptu and improvised ceremony. She was inside the Tower of London, and she had been preparing for the coronation to come, rehearsing the oaths and changes of clothes in regalia, etc. You know, all that stuff. Because, you know, you and I have definitely had coronations before. We know exactly what she's doing.
Yes.
Kneeling before her counselors, she spoke of how she had come to the throne and what she considered to be her duties as queen. She said it was her solemn intention to carry out the task that God had given her to his greater glory and service to the public good and all her subjects' benefit. She actually stayed on her knees the entire time. I don't know what that's about, but she did. Her counselors were so deeply moved that they literally were all crying. I love that. No one really knew how to, like, answer her. They were just like, I'm crying, Mary. This is now, like, you know, pretty extraordinary times because a woman was now to wear England's crown. She was a small woman of 37, and she had, like, really large eyes that were, like, bright. She had a round face, reddish hair, and she really liked clothes. So she cut, like, a striking figure, although it was one that was marked by age and ill health. She suffered bouts of illness, heart palpitations, and headaches. She was short-sighted, and she was really prone to melancholy, which I think is called depression. although for most of her adult life, she didn't have security or happiness. The people regarded her as great-hearted, proud, and, you know, awesome. She was highly intelligent and very well educated. She knew a lot of languages, and her frequent acclamation was, in thee, O Lord, is my trust. Let me never be confounded. If God be for us, who can be against us? A lot of people. But she had secured the throne against all odds, so it's a victory. Woo-hoo! Yeah, Mary. Literally, Catherine of Aragon is crying right now. Henry VIII is crying for an entirely different reason. A female accession had been the prospect that her father had gone to great lengths to avoid. But on Edward's death, all the plausible candidates for the English throne were female. Poor Edward, remember, he had to overcome his misogyny. In default of male heirs, he had had to accept Lady Jane Grey as his Protestant successor. Yet Mary had managed to win support all across the religious spectrum as the rightful Tudor heir. It was also really important to remember that she won the victory without any, like, direct foreign aid because the English people had put her on the throne. So that's important. They like her. They love her.
Yes.
Her victory was widely celebrated. She was as popular as any English sovereign who had ascended the throne before her, and her triumph was one of the most surprising events of the 16th century. Because she had preserved the Tudor dynasty, because, you know, Lady Jane Grey was, like, not technically a Tudor.
Yeah.
Like, she, that's not her last name. Now both the French king and the emperor were like, hey, Mary, remember how we're best friends? But, you know, she's just got to actually get to her tower now. Actually, she's got to get to London. So as bells across the country rang out the news of her victory, she left Framlingham to begin her progress towards London. Along the route and at her various stopping places, her subjects were like, Mary, you're so cool. We love you. She spent 2 days in Ipswich. Then she moved to Colchester, where she stayed at the home of Muriel Christmas, who had actually been a servant of Catherine of Aragon. And then she journeyed to her residence, Beaulieu, in Essex. From Beaulieu, she rode on to Wanstead, east of London, where she was joined by her sister Elizabeth, who had ridden from the Strand to meet her. And Elizabeth was accompanied by, like, a bunch of people, like gentlemen, knights, and ladies.
Woohoo!
At 7 in the evening of August 3rd, 1553, Mary entered the city of London, and she was accompanied by, you know, basically everyone that was important enough to accompany her.
Mm-hmm.
As the imperial ambassadors reported, her look, her manner, her gestures, and her countenance were in such that in no event could they have been improved. Behind her rode Sir Anthony Browne, followed by Elizabeth, then the Duchess of Norfolk, the Marchioness of Exeter, and, like, a bunch of peeresses, gentlewomen, and ladies-in-waiting that had never before been seen in such numbers. It was like a big display of dynastic unity of power and authority, and it was the first formal appearance of England's queen regnant. According to one estimate, there was like 10,000 people that accompanied her into the capital.
Oh,
that's well, a lot. That.
Yeah.
The imperial ambassadors wrote that the people are full of hope that her reign will be a godly, righteous, and just one, and help to establish her firmly on the throne. Neat. Now she was in possession of her kingdom, so she could begin, you know, governing. She had won the throne at Framlingham with a small council of her household officers. All of them were of proven loyalty, but most of them didn't really have any political experience. Then as she journeyed to London, a bunch of Edward's counselors were like, we're so sorry, we swear our loyalty to you. Though she doubted their loyalty and their motives, most of them were restored to royal favor upon their submission. So, yay.
Yay.
By the time Mary reached the tower, she had a privy council of some 25 members. I don't know if that's, like, normal or not, but, you know, it's like a class. The accession of a queen regnant meant that there had to be changes in the monarch's private apartments. The male servants of Edward's entourage were replaced by female attendants. Most of them were long-serving servants from her old household, like Jane Dormer, Mary Finch, Frances Waldegrave, Frances Jerningham, and Susan Clarencius, who is, like, Mary's bestie, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, important to her. Their positions close to the queen gave these women a measure of influence, especially in the early months of her reign, which was a fact that was of concern to the emperor.
I see. Yes.
But it was Simon Renard, who was the emperor's ambassador, who had an unprecedented role as secret counselor and kind of confidant. From the start, she was like, I don't really know how to make myself safe. And the ambassadors were like, she didn't speak of this to anyone except us. She couldn't really trust her counsel too much. But the thing is, to consult an ambassador as though you're a counselor upon the domestic affairs of the kingdom that he is not the ambassador, like, of, was a very unusual step. Okay. After her accession, they're just like, I just don't. She wrote to the emperor, and she was like, thanks, bestie. May it please your majesty to continue in your goodwill towards me, and I will correspond in every way which it may please your majesty to command, thus fulfilling my duty as your good and obedient cousin. It was a sign of things to come. Let's also remember that she was betrothed to Charles the Emperor at, like, 5, when he's, like, 24. And then she's like, hey, cousin.
Hey, bestie.
A week before Mary's ceremonial entry into London, John Dudley, the Duke of Northumberland, and his accomplices were brought back to London under heavy guard. 2 weeks later, the Duke was tried and condemned to death. RIP.
RIP.
During his time in the Tower, he was like, I have so much remorse for my sins. And he begged to be pardoned, and he professed, he was like, I will become Catholic. I am Catholic. But that didn't save him. So he went to the block. In front of a huge crowd on August 22nd. None of the other July rebels were executed, I mean, at first. And both Lady Jane Grey and her husband, Guildford, remained in the tower in imprisonment, but, like, honorable imprisonment. The emperor was like, Mary, you gotta kill them. But she was like, I cannot be induced to consent that Lady Jane Grey should die. Lady Jane Grey had written a long confession to her, explaining that she didn't know anything of the plan to declare her queen until 3 days before she was taken to the tower, and she hadn't ever given any consent to the Duke's intrigues and plots. Also, Mary doesn't really like killing, you know, family. Yeah. She's like, no. Upon the proclamation of Mary's accession, Lady Jane Grey was like, I gladly gave up my royal dignity because I knew that it belonged to Mary. Mary acknowledged her submission, and she was like, yeah, chill. Jane's mother, the Duchess of Suffolk, was a longstanding acquaintance and cousin, and had spent Christmas with Mary the previous year. Mary declared to the ambassador that my conscience will not permit me to have her put to death. Conscience. Freaking conscience. It's really a family trait there. My conscience. There was evidence, however, that religious change had already begun. Even before Mary had reached London, altars and crucifixes had started to reappear in the city's churches, and matins and evensong were being recited not by commandment, but by the devotions of the people. And on St. Bartholomew's Day, August 24th, a Latin Mass was said. So, you know, not very Protestant. But amid, like, those demonstrations of enthusiasm for the old religion, violent disturbances did erupt across London. On Sunday, August 13th, during a sermon at St. Paul's Cross, Gilbert Bourne, chaplain to the Bishop of London, was pulled out of the pulpit by vagabonds, and one of them threw his dagger at him. Eek.
Oh.
Pamphlets that were, like, Protestants take up arms against Mary's government started to, like, litter the streets. Nobles and gentlemen favoring the word of God were asked to overthrow the, quote-unquote, detestable papists, pope people. Especially the great devil, Stephen Gardiner, Bishop of Winchester. A number of leading Protestant figures were actually arrested, and leading reformist priests were imprisoned some weeks later. In September, Thomas Cranmer, our best friend, the Archbishop of Canterbury, was imprisoned for treason in his role, for his role in Lady Jane's attempted coup. I'm pretty sure she executed him, so. R.I.P. to Thomas Cranmer. Rest in peace, love. You would have loved seeing Elizabeth ascend to the throne. Wait, let me search it up. Because I don't want to give you all false information.
Thanks.
I think he did get executed. Yeah, he's executed on March 21st, 1556. Almost my birthday. Okay. In mid-August, as violence and alarm was, like, spreading throughout the country, Mary issued her first proclamation. She was like, y'all, live in quiet sort and Christian charity. And she told them that further religious change would be settled by common consent by act of parliament. Yet while Mary publicly was like, no, it's fine, she made secret steps towards restoring Catholicism. I actually can't talk. In August, she addressed a private letter to Pope Julius III, petitioning him to remit. She was like, no, you gotta, like, give us back our pope's status. She's like, I'm sorry about everything that my dad did, can we please come back to you? You know,
yeah.
Once he learned of Mary's accession, the Pope appointed as cardinal and papal legate Reginald Pole, the son of Mary's former governess Margaret Pole, in order to arrange the reconciliation of England to the Catholic Church. When Parliament summoned for the beginning of October, Pole demanded that the issue of papal supremacy and monastic property be quickly reserved. You know, fun.
Yeah.
Yet Mary had come to realize the kind of scale of her task to, you know, make England great again with Catholicness. On September 11th, she wrote to the Cardinal of Imola, informing him that no legatine mission should be sent until the time was, like, right. She was aware of the dangers of introducing religious changes before they could be sanctioned by Parliament. For now, she was like, no, I don't want to force people to go to Mass. Which, you know, that's probably smart.
Yeah.
It's not nice to force people into religion. But, you know, it's also 1553. So that's kind of what they do. It's just kind of the thing. As Mary declared to Renard, she was like, so far, I haven't found anything better to do than to just leave everybody to like do whatever they want with their religion. If some people hold to the old and some people hold to the new, they shouldn't be interfered with until the coming parliament should decide by law. However, there was one notable exception. You get three guesses as to who, everybody. She's a ginger. It's Elizabeth. What? No. What? No. She's definitely Catholic, guys. What are you talking about? definitely a Catholic. Within 2 weeks of Mary's entry into London, Renard reported that he had raised with the Queen the presence at court of the Lady Elizabeth, who he was like, actually, she might, you know, try to take over the throne. Writing to Mary in late August, the imperial ambassadors advised her not to be too ready to trust the Lady Elizabeth. Luckily, Mary and Elizabeth don't really like each other that much anymore, so they're okay. Aware of such suspicions against her, and she was like, okay, the Queen doesn't like me as much as I wish she did, like, in public. Yeah. Elizabeth asked Mary for a private audience. They met at the beginning of September in Richmond, when in one of the galleries of the palace. Mary was accompanied by one of her ladies and Elizabeth by one of her maids. Elizabeth fell on her knees before the Queen and started crying. She's like, I know that you're not well disposed towards me, and I know no other cause except religion. Elizabeth is like a really good actor. Literally, in the young Elizabeth, in like the last chapter, they were talking about the things that she inherited from her parents, and it's like she inherited her, like, her gift of being a good actress from her mother. Just a talent, the two of them. She was like, I acted out of ignorance, not obstinacy. I've never been taught Catholic. Like, I've never been taught to be Catholic. I have only ever been taught, like, the Church of England because it was created for me. So, like, chill. And she asked for books so that if she read them, she might know if her conscience would allow her to be persuaded, or that maybe Mary could send her a teacher to instruct her in the truth. You know, Mary was like, oh my gosh, this is good. She's being good. So she granted her request. Meanwhile, as Elizabeth had promised, she attended Mass in the Chapel Royal on September 8th, the Feast of the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin. You know, one day after her birthday. Fun. It was clear that she was under duress. She had tried to excuse herself on the grounds of ill health, and she complained loudly of a stomach ache literally all the way to church. That is so childish, but you know what, whatever. My stomach hurts, Mary. I don't want to go to church. Me, literally my entire childhood. That's actually not true. Church is fun when you go to my church because they give me cookies. And also jelly beans, sometimes. It was a rerun of the earlier fighting between Mary and Edward when he had implored her to submit to his authority and accept the Protestant changes. But unlike Mary, Elizabeth didn't have any desire to be a martyr. She was like, nah, I'd just rather stay alive, y'all. That'd be fun for me. No one, least of all Mary, was fooled by Elizabeth's display of compliance. Within days, the imperial ambassadors were reporting that last Sunday, the Lady Elizabeth did not go to Mass, adding that the Queen had sent them word that she had already half turned away from the good road upon which she had begun to travel. Mary continued to press Elizabeth as to the purity of her motives, questioning whether she really believed, as Catholics did, concerning the Holy Sacrament, or whether she just went to Mass in order to dissimulate out of fear or hypocrisy. She's like, sorry, lion. Although she did continue to doubt Elizabeth's sincerity, probably for good reason, Mary allowed her sister to remain at court and to attend her coronation. But underlying tensions remained. Within weeks, Renard reported that Mary was considering barring Elizabeth from the succession on account of her heretical opinions and illegitimacy, characteristics in which she resembled her mother as well. Fun. As Anne Boleyn had quote unquote caused great trouble in the kingdom, quote, I think that's called cause great trouble for you, Mary. she feared that Elizabeth might do the same, and particularly that she might imitate her mother in being a French partisan, which I think means whore. She told Renard that it would burden her conscience too heavily to allow a bastard to succeed. Mary, I mean, technically, she, like, made Parliament declare that she wasn't a bastard, so yeah. Whatever. Mary increasingly suspected that Elizabeth went to Mass only out of hypocrisy. She didn't have a single servant or maid of honor who wasn't a heretic. She talked every day with heretics, and she lent an ear to all of their, like, thoughts. Yeah. Finally, in early December, Elizabeth asked for permission to leave court. Mary was like, yes, go. But they did part on affectionate terms, you know, in public. Mary gave her sables, and en route to Hatfield, Elizabeth stopped to write to Mary asking her for stuff for her chapel, and the queen was like, yes, send all those things to her because it was for God's service, and Elizabeth wished to bear witness to the religion she declared she meant to follow. I would just like to add that, like, I'm going to assume Elizabeth is probably, like, a lot of her ladies and stuff are young like her, which means that they're all probably, like, don't remember when being Catholic was what you did in England.
Yeah.
Like, evidently all of her friends are going to be heretics because she probably hangs out with other young people.
Yeah.
I mean, like, some parents did still, like, you know, probably teach their kids, let's all be Catholic, but, like, that's just kind of, if they went to church, they went to Church of England church, not Catholic church. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah. There were no precedents, because we're going to talk about the coronation now, friends. It's not on a timeline. We're just talking. There were no precedents for the crowning of a queen regnant, let alone a Catholic bastard. That's what the book said.
Oh my God.
The 14th century guide that was first used for the coronation of Richard III outlined only the procession and ceremony of a queen consort. And after weeks of religious unrest and plotting in the capital, there were fears of, you know, violence, you know, assassination, maybe. Assassination in America. Is it worth it? That's going to be my U.S. history topic, guys. It's not. I don't think I could do that. A number of former Edwardian counselors called for unprecedented change. They argued that the coronation should be postponed until after Parliament had met and confirmed Mary's legitimacy. It was a proposal that was only really born of the fears raised by having a, you know, a female queen, and one that Mary rejected. She was like, nah, fam, we're not doing that. The coronation had been set for October 1st, which was a Sunday, according to tradition. Although the 1552 Act of Uniformity remained in force, Mary was to be crowned, like, supreme head of the church. The coronation ceremony was, like, a full Catholic mass. Recognizing the potential illegitimacy of the ceremony, Mary requested that Pole, as the papal legate, absolve her and her bishops on the day of coronation so that they could say mass and administer the sacraments without sin. I don't know. Moreover, they're also concerned that the oils that were used in the anointing may not be such as they ought, and so she asked the imperial ambassadors to write to the Bishop of Arras, Charles's chief minister in Brussels, to secretly prepare specially consecrated oil for her anointing. Because, you know, it could be, like, Protestantly anointed, like, consecrated, so they need Catholic oil.
I see.
It's oil. But it's holy oil, you know, when it touches her. That's, like, when her body, like, joins with God or something. It's very important, the oil. It's, like, really a big deal. They're talking about it in the crown, but I don't remember. Bishop Gardiner, who had recently been freed from the Tower, who is conservative, was chosen to perform the rite in place of Thomas Cranmer, Archbishop of Canterbury. Because, you know, Archbishop of Canterbury is, like, the most important priest in England.
Yeah.
With the amendments made, everything was ready for the pageantry to begin. On Thursday, September 28th, Mary departed St. James's Palace for Whitehall, accompanied by Elizabeth and their former stepmother, Anne of Cleves. Anne of Cleves! I love her. I love how she's just still there. Like, everyone else is gone. Honestly, she's just like, what's up,
she's
y'all?
She's there.
And she's still in the procession. Like,
she's there.
She's just there. She's like, well, actually, I'm their aunt because I'm their father's sister according to the terms of our divorce agreement. So, hey, y'all. At Westminster, Mary boarded her barge, and she was escorted to the Tower by the Lord Mayor, the Aldermen of London, and the companies. Their boats had, like, banners and streamers on them. As the boat approached the Tower, a salute was fired, and at the water gate, she thanked the city officials, and then she entered the Tower. Yay! At 11 in the morning, on Sunday, October 1st, 1553, Mary proceeded to the south transept of Westminster Abbey for her coronation. This obviously had never been seen before because, you know, woman. And it combined elements of both, like, precedent and new things. She was dressed as a male monarch in traditional state robes of crimson velvet, and she walked beneath a canopy borne by the barons of the Cinque Ports. The Duke of Norfolk carried the crown. I would just like to add that he's, like, 80 at this point, so he's still kicking around. This is, like, Anne Boleyn's uncle.
Yeah.
He's still here. He was imprisoned by Henry VIII, but Mary let him out. He's, like, really old. The Marquess of Winchester carried the orb, and the Earl of Arundel carried the ball and scepter. Before her and Paris walked an ordered procession of gentlemen, knights, and counselors, and they all had, like, stuff on their heads and crosses in their hands. She went before the altar, and she lay face down on a velvet cushion. I don't really know what that's about, but, yeah.
I was like,
Prayers were said over her. From the side of the stage, she listened to the sermon of George Day, the Bishop of Chichester. Why do all these sound exactly the same? On the subject of obedience owed to a monarch. Then, kneeling in front of the altar, she made her oaths, pledging to defend her subjects, maintain peace, and administer justice throughout the realm. She had feared that the oath would have been tampered with so that in some way she would be called upon to condone the new religion, and so she therefore added the words just and licit laws to the traditional form, you know. So she said yeah to the oath.
Yeah.
And then she was crowned with the crown of Edward the Confessor, which was the imperial crown of the realm, and with another that was specially made for her, a vast yet, like, really simply designed crown with two arches, a large fleur-de-lis, and prominent crosses. She was crowned in a similar fashion to her male predecessors, with a sword as, like, basically, she got a scepter in one hand, and then in the other hand, she got a scepter that was normally given to queens, and it had, like, doves on it, because, you know, she's both. She's cool. Finally, the crimson mantle that had ermine on it was fastened on her shoulders, and she sat in St. Edward's chair, where she received the nobles led by Gardiner, who paid homage to her as queen. Yay! She's queen now, y'all. We've been waiting for this for a long time. In one of its first acts, Parliament declared that the marriage of Mary's parents, Catherine of Aragon and Henry VIII, had been valid and that Mary was therefore legitimate. The queen's title was vindicated from the corrupt and unlawful sentence that had divorced her father and mother and from subsequent laws that had declared her illegitimate. It was what she had fought for since the years of her adolescence. Finally, she had restored her mother's memory and confirmed her own legitimacy. I can only imagine that that was, like, a really emotional moment for her.
Yeah, definitely.
And it makes me really sad, but also really happy. But also, like, she's like, well, my parents had a legitimate marriage, Elizabeth, so I guess you're a bastard. Sorry. Elizabeth is like, you know what, whatever. I feel like Elizabeth probably didn't even care at that point because she was 2 years and 8 months old when she became a bastard. So. True. She's like, Mary, I really don't remember anything else, so you go ahead and do that.
You go off.
She also, like, Elizabeth technically could have overturned that and said that her parents' marriage was legitimate, too, so, like, when she became queen, but she didn't, so. That's nice of her, I guess. Yes. She also couldn't do it because the people wouldn't have stood for it. She was like, actually, Anne Boleyn was actually married to my dad. People would be like, what? Next, Mary repealed the Edwardian religious legislation that had pronounced the prayer book, the sacraments, and given priests the right to marry, thereby restoring the church settlement to that of the final years of her father's reign. All offenses that were defined as treasonable during Henry and Edward's reigns were repealed, and the law was taken back to its basic definition of 1352. That sounds a little old-fashioned, Mary. But, whatever. To make the bills acceptable to the House of Commons, they couldn't, like, allude to the Pope at all. Yeah. Anyone who had, like, you know, old monastery and nunnery lands, whatever they actually believed in, feared that if they returned to Rome, they would have to give up their property. You know, then they would lose mm-hmm. money, because I'm sure they literally all the people that had been able to get the land probably had other land that they would have been fine to survive on. But, you know, rich people have a bit of a problem with giving up things sometimes.
Yes, they do.
Writing to Pole, Mary explained that the commons wouldn't hear of the abolishing, specifically of the law that gave the title of the supremacy of the church in the realm of the crown, suspecting that to be an introduction of the Pope's authority into the realm, which they were like, nah, we're not doing that. Although the bill was actually eventually passed, it demonstrated that Parliament was willing to restore church services and religious ceremonies to the pattern of the 1540s. It wasn't prepared to sanction the abolition of the supreme headship and the return of papal authority in the realm. She was forced to kind of calm down. For now, she would just be the supreme head of the Church of England. Not what she wanted, but, you know, she can kind of control what happens in the church if she is in charge of it. She knew that she couldn't move too fast, but she also knew that she couldn't really show what she actually wanted to do because the opposition were like, nah. On the day that Parliament rose, a dead dog with a shaved head representing a priest, a rope about its neck, was like thrown into the windows of Mary's presence chamber. Like it came through and was on the floor.
Oh.
Yeah. They like dressed up a dog like a priest and it was dead. And then they put it into her thing. And so they're like, that's going to happen to the Catholic priest, basically. Because the way it was shaved, like it was dressed up as a Catholic priest. Yeah, Mary was really mad. Not because she was a dog person, because, you know, priest. Maybe she was also a dog person, but that was not her main concern. And she warned Parliament that such acts might move her to a kind of justice that was further removed from justice than she would wish. Threats? What?
Threats?
gradually, signs indicating the return to Catholicism became visible across the country. In November 1553, St. Catherine's image was carried around the steeple at St. Paul's on her patronal feast day, and on St. Andrew's Day, there was a general procession in Latin with, you know, Catholic stuff. Mm-hmm. Upon Mary's accession, there was general expectation that she would marry, because no one expected a woman to rule alone. It was important that she had an heir to ensure a Catholic succession and someone to assist her in government. Mary now accepted the need to marry. At 37, though, she was going to have to wed really fast if she was going to stand any chance of conceiving. But, yeah. I mean, okay. It is true that, like, your menopause doesn't come at 40 most of the time, but also people like middle aged was like 30 in those times, so
yeah,
they're like bestie. Also, once you get older, pregnancies are way harder, and it's also 1553, so I'd imagine their natal care is not the best.
No.
Despite the contemporary belief that a queen needed a consort, there's also like people are kind of afraid, because they assumed that a husband would get all the power. Under English law, not only would a woman's property, titles, and income pass to her husband upon marriage, but she also had to concede the governance of her own person. Like, basically, you give up yourself to your husband, and they're in charge of you. For Mary, any prospective bridegroom had to be of royal blood and a good Catholic. The thing is, there's no men of royal blood, really, in England. English hopes came to focus on the 25-year-old Edward Courtenay, a great-grandson of Edward IV. His father, the Marquess of Exeter, had been executed by Henry VIII in 1538, and his mother, Gertrude Courtenay, I can't talk, the Marchioness of Exeter, remained one of Mary's most trusted friends. Chief among his supporters was the Lord Chancellor Stephen Gardiner, who had spent a number of years imprisoned with Courtenay in the Tower. Although Gardiner was supported by almost all the other privy councillors, Mary was like, nah, I'm not marrying one of my own subjects. Literally, that is all that people wanted her to do. They're like, Mary, please, that is our only hope, so that you don't marry someone else, and then they're in charge of our country. The prospect of Mary's marriage was of great importance in the struggle between the houses of Habsburg and Valois, which is the French and imperial royal houses. If Charles could succeed in establishing his son, Philip, upon the throne of England as Mary's husband, then the sea routes between Spain and the Netherlands would be secured, and the Netherlands themselves would be saved from falling into the clutches of the King of France, which they seemed likely to do, and France would kind of be, like, surrounded. On October 10th, Renard knelt before Mary and formally offered the hand of Prince Philip. he assured her that if age and health had permitted, the emperor would have been like, Mary, let's get married ourselves. But because he was, like, really old, he couldn't think of anyone better suited than Philip, who was of middle age, of distinguished qualities, and of an honorable and Catholic upbringing. Philip is 26, 11 years Mary's junior. She was the granddaughter of Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain. He was their great-grandchild. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mary's first cousins with Charles, and this is Charles's son. So everybody think about that. That is called very incestuous. Like, grossly incestuous. makes me want to throw up a little bit. But, you know, yeah. It would have, it's better than if she had married Charles, what she was supposed to do when she was a little child. So, don't know. He had actually already been married to his other cousin, Infanta Maria of Portugal, who had died in childbirth in July 1545. Their son, Don Carlos, was now 9 years old. For Mary, the prospect of marriage to Philip represented her imperial destiny, and it was a chance to for her to join the family that she had long since relied on for support and protection. She was really, really happy with it. She called it a greater match than she deserved, but she said that she didn't know how the people of England would take it. Not well.
No.
She was like, if Philip wants to be like in my government, like if he wants to take over stuff, I can't permit that. Also, if he attempts to fill posts and offices with strangers, for her country wouldn't stand for that. She was like, I will marry him if I can separate my duties as Philip's wife and my responsibilities as queen, just like my grandmother Isabella did before me. Finally, on the evening of Sunday, October 29th, she sent again for Renard. He found her in her chamber alone, save for Susan Clarencius, her trusted lady-in-waiting, and the room was barely lit. It was a momentous decision for Mary, both as a woman and as queen. Her council and some of her most trusted household servants opposed the match, and so it could therefore be expected that the country would too. But she was like, I've been inspired by God to be Prince Philip's wife, so now that my mind has been made up, I will never change but love him perfectly and never give him cause to be jealous. So she's going to marry Philip.
Marrying Philip.
She's like, that's what I'm doing, y'all. On November 16th, 1553, 20 members-ish of the Commons came and they were like, you can't marry Philip. And she had actually postponed that meeting for 3 weeks, claiming ill health, but now she couldn't delay it anymore. As Sir John Pollard, the Speaker of the Commons, put it, it would displease the people to have a foreigner as the Queen's consort. If Mary died childless, her husband would deplete the country of money and arms. He might decide to remove Mary from the kingdom, and if he were left a widower with young children, he might try to usurp the crown for himself. Instead, he argued that it would be better for the queen to marry an Englishman. But Mary was like, sorry, I thank you for encouraging me to marry, but I don't appreciate the idea that the commons tries to attempt to choose a companion for my bed. So, sweetheart, your father would have done it before. Is that better? The Commons petition did not make anything change. She had already made her decision. On the day after Parliament was dissolved, her betrothal was made public. When the imperial delegation arrived in the city of London to sign the marriage treaty on January 2nd, 1554, it was not received well. The people did not rejoice, and they held down their heads in sorrow. As the retinue rode through the capital, boys literally threw snowballs at them.
Really?
Like, actual snowballs. They pelted them with snowballs because they were so mad that they were coming.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Little boys are like that, but, like, the fact that they were just like, yeah, I'll just chuck some snowballs at these people because I don't want them to come. On January 14th, the terms of the treaty were officially proclaimed at Westminster to the Lords, nobility, and gentlemen by the Lord Chancellor. Gardiner explained that Mary had made her decision to wed Philip partly for the wealth and enriching of the realm, and partly for friendship and other weighty considerations. They should, he continued, thank God that so noble, worthy, and famous a prince would humble himself as in this marriage to take upon him rather as a subject than otherwise, and that the queen should rule all things as she does now, and that there should be council, no Spaniard. But, you know, that didn't really help people's fears.
No.
After Gardiner's declaration of the terms of the marriage treaty, one chronicler describes how the news was very much misliked. Almost each man was abashed, looking daily for worse matters to grow shortly after. So in late November 1553, a group of conspirators led by Sir Thomas Wyatt met to discuss the overthrow of the Marian government. Their plan would see a four-pronged rising in Kent, the Midlands, the Southwest, and the Welsh marches, followed by a march on London. Mary would be deposed and the Spanish marriage thwarted. Elizabeth and Edward Courtenay would be married and both placed on the throne. So we're not going to talk about the Wyatt Rebellion because we're going to cover it in our mini cast next week because it would take way too long to actually like discuss it, and y'all don't have that kind of time. Well, maybe you do, but you can figure that out yourselves. But basically all that you need to know is that Wyatt did not succeed. He surrendered. Elizabeth was then put under a lot of suspicion. We will talk about it next week, about like her actual role in it. And unfortunately, the result of Wyatt's rebellion meant that Lady Jane Grey and her husband were put to death. Although neither of them had actually taken part in Wyatt's rebellion, they were used as like figureheads, and they were now too great a threat to live. Both of them had actually been found guilty of high treason and condemned in November of the previous year, but Mary had then protested Jane's innocence and said that she wouldn't put her to death. But unfortunately, Jane's father, the Duke of Suffolk, had been involved in the rebellion, and so he had sealed his daughter's fate.
Oh.
Yeah, so thanks a lot, Dad. Yeah. Wyatt also got executed, you know. he went to the block on Tower Hill on April 11th, which is my grandma's birthday.
Yay.
Happy birthday, Grams. Love you. Upon the scaffold, he addressed the crowd, and he said, I'm going to quote him, "Whereas it is said and whistled abroad that I should accuse my Lady Elizabeth's Grace, it is not so, good people, as I have declared no less to the Queen's Council," unquote. Then he, you know, got beheaded.
As one does,
yeah. His head was placed on top of the gibbet at St. James, and it was stolen within 1 week.
His head was stolen?
Yes!
Why?
Because people are gross and weird.
They just wanted his head?
Yeah, I guess. They probably, like, did something to it, you know?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the Wyatt Rebellion. We'll talk about it next week. Y'all can, I don't know, if you really want to, you could, like, stop listening now and then wait for it to come out and then keep listening from this point. To secure the English acceptance of the alliance, the emperor had conceded highly favorable terms. Although Philip was granted the right to enjoy the style and name of King of England, the treaty denied him any regal power and limited his involvement to assisting Mary in the administration of her realm, as far as the rights, laws, privileges, and customs of both kingdoms permitted. So basically, he's supposed to be, like, a queen, but, like, a king.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He's the consort. That's what he's supposed to be. Should Mary die before Philip, he wouldn't have any further claim to authority in England. The succession to the English crown was limited to Mary's right of inheritance, and only the children from their marriage might succeed them. Don Carlos, Philip's existing heir, did not have a claim. No foreign office holders could be introduced in the English government, and England would not be involved in any Habsburg Wars. It was stated explicitly that England was not to be drawn into the wars between Emperor Charles V and Henry II, the King of France. So, you know, pretty good terms. Like, as far as they go. The treaty specifically sought to separate Mary as Queen of England from Mary, Philip's spouse, so as to underline that her power and status would not be diminished by the marriage. She was to be sole queen. Well, the marriage treaty prescribed Mary's independent sovereignty. Another act passed in the same parliament, the Act Concerning Regal Power, which stated that Mary held her regal power as fully and absolutely as her male predecessors had. Yay, that's good.
Yay!
It's a good thing. It also helps Elizabeth when she comes later. So, though Philip had pledged to be an obedient son and follow his father's will, the marriage held few personal attractions for him. Mary was 11 years his senior. Yeah, and she's not exactly as pretty as she used to be, unfortunately. And he also referred to her as his Cara y muy amada tía, which means dear and beloved aunt.
Oh.
I love Habsburg family trees. They're just one single branch. That is why y'all all have trash chins, buddy. Further, he didn't really like the treaty. He declared that he wasn't bound by an agreement that had been reached without his knowledge. He said he would sign it so that the marriage could take place, but by no means in order to bind himself or his heirs to observe the articles, especially any that might burden his conscience. So he's like, actually, well, I don't really want to follow it, so no, but I'll sign it so that I can get married, whatever. Yeah. I love, just a note, Philip tries to marry Elizabeth, like, several times once she becomes queen. So he's really into getting power in England.
Seems like it.
And then he's also the guy that leads the Spanish Armada against her that she defeats. So crushed. I love that she got to beat him because it's fun. Finally, on June 16th, Mary and her entire court set out from Richmond for Winchester, and there they took up residence in the Episcopal Palace of Bishops Waltham, which had been specially prepared ahead of her arrival. The decision to hold the wedding ceremony outside of London was driven by fears of disorder in the capital, so once again, they were worried that violence was going to occur. At 3 in the afternoon of Thursday, July 19th, Philip finally landed at Southampton. A great throng of nobles and gentry met his ship. An English household of 350, headed by the Earl of Arundel, had been made ready for the prince, but Philip had brought his own, which immediately caused tension between the English and the Spaniards. Thanks a lot, Philip.
Thanks so much.
At about 10 in the evening, Philip walked through the gardens to the bishop's palace where he and Mary were to meet. Surrounded by 3 or 4 counselors and her ladies-in-waiting, Mary came out to the door of her chamber and received him. Hand in hand, they sat down, and for about half an hour, they spoke in pleasant conversation. Philip spoke in Spanish, Mary replied in French, which I think that's a little weird since she knew Spanish, but whatever. At 3 the following afternoon, the prince made his first public visit to the queen. Accompanied by a number of English nobles, he walked on his own behind them in a cloak of black cloth embroidered with silver and a pair of silver hose, which tights. Entering the courtyard of the bishop's palace to the sound of music, he passed into the great hall where Mary received him in the presence of the people. She was very, 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 very excited. He was not. It was a marriage that promised much, although it remained to be seen whether Mary's hopes for both a political partnership and a personal union could be realized. And that's where we're going to leave it, because I like cliffhangers. They're fun.
Cliffhangers.
Okay. Woo. Thank you for listening, everybody. Y'all are really cool.
Yay. Thanks.
I think that, I don't know. You should go follow us on social media. We have a TikTok account at NotSoBloodyMary_podcast. We have an Instagram account at the same handle, NotSoBloodyMary_podcast. We have, Instagram is that. And then Twitter is Bloody_not, but I don't post on it because it scares me. And yeah, you can follow Grace on TikTok at @TheLovely_bookworm. You can even see her sister if you go to her recent video.
Wow. That video blew up.
I didn't even watch it all the way through because I didn't have headphones and I just liked it. Was it good?
It blew up and I got like thousands more followers from it.
Wow.
Like a lot.
I guess people like Ella.
I guess they do.
I guess she's just like a vibe. Yeah, yes. I didn't watch it because I was like sitting in the room with my mom and I was like, that would be weird. I don't think you want my mom to hear your TikToks.
Yeah, not really. It's embarrassing.
She was being annoyed anyway, so she didn't deserve to hear them. We were watching Suits and we were just really excited. It was a really rough day. I thought that Mike and Rachel, it was just really hard for me. My comfort couple. You should, do those things. You should also go to iTunes and leave us a review because that helps more people find us. And also, we don't have any reviews yet, and I don't want to leave one for myself because that's awkward.
So help us out, please.
I might just force my brother to, like, write one. But, you should do that. And you should also, if you want to, go to anchor.fm /NotSoBloodyMary. I don't think it's /NotSoBloodyMary, but, like, go to anchor.fm and search us up. And you can send us a voicemail. Which is fun. Grace, what should they do today?
Okay, so yesterday was a really nice day. Right now,
it was so pretty.
It's raining, but yesterday it was really nice out. I went outside, the neighbor's cat found me.
My best friend?
Yeah, Larry.
Larry.
I have some pictures to send you.
But Jordan learned the word beer yesterday.
Beer?
Beer? Yeah. She knows a lot of words that maybe she shouldn't know, but she learned beer.
That's nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, yesterday I was just laying on the grass, like just laying down.
Yeah.
And soaking up the sun. That was really nice and comforting. So whatever weather it is where you are, get on weather appropriate clothing and lay on the grass unless it's dangerous or it's raining.
Or then, you have a grass allergy. Put down a towel if you have a grass allergy. Dangerous. I don't want to get rashes.
Yeah, don't do that. But, you know, just lay on the grass.
Okay. Unless it's, like, thunderstorming, we don't advise that.
No, that's not safe. Don't do that.
No. Grace, do you remember when we used to actually be able to do that in your backyard? On towels? Yeah. And talk? Yeah. Yeah. Go get... Follow the rules and stay home, but also...
please stay home.
Do things that are fun at your house.
Inside. Enjoy life when you can.
Or like in your backyard. Yeah, unless you don't have a backyard.
Yeah.
If you don't have a backyard, lay on the floor and listen to Taylor Swift.
That's always a good time.
But, like, Folklore and Evermore, because they give me, like, existential crises when I listen to them with absolutely nothing else. This is me trying as my therapy. Rosemary, I'm sorry. Giving up. That's actually not true. Rosemary, if you're listening, I haven't given up.
Okay.
I'm so tired. Okay. Yeah, have a good day, everybody. And, ooh, I got a notification on my Outlook mail. Wow, it's just mismatch it. Okay, so have a good time. Yeah,
go find some grass.
Go, I don't know. Don't watch Bloody Mary Villain or Victim because it made me sad. I made it like 10 minutes in. This is May, so, you know, keep certain people in your thoughts and prayers. Such as me.
Yeah, she will be rolling on the floor from death.
It is not my month. Literally, I cry so much. I just don't know anymore. I think that we're going to have a really hard time with that. But then I'll just call Ms. Match and be like, Ms. Match it. Because she called Amblin the smartest woman in history. So,
ayy.
Okay. Bye, everybody. We love you very much. And we hope that you have a very good rest of your whatever. And if your school ends soon, because, you know, some places in the United States end earlier. I'm sure there are other countries that are like that. Have fun.
Have Jealous. An amazing day. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.